Today I'm joined by Baroness Brenda Dean of Thornton Le Fylde. She's been a member of the House of Lords since 1993 and is currently chair of the House of Lords Defence Group. A lifelong trade union member, she joined the Society of Graphical and Allied Trade when she was just 16, working as a secretary in a local print firm straight from school. Baroness Dean rose through the ranks and was elected to the top position of General Secretary in 1985, a position she held until 1991. During that time, she had to manage a bitter year-long dispute between 4,000 of her union members and Rupert Murdoch's News International when he moved the printing of his titles from Fleet Street to Wapping. She managed to secure £55 million of compensation for her workers as the printing industry was forced to face up to the inevitability of change. Fair-minded, straightforward and honest were qualities that were attributed to Brenda Dean during this time. Her negotiations never sought to pitch employers against employees, but find solutions that were workable for all. She documented this story in her book Hot Metal, Sogat, Murdoch and Me. Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
And welcome to the University of Warwick. Baroness Dean, congratulations on receiving your honorary degree. Tell me, first of all, what does receiving this award mean to you?
It means an awful lot to me. It's a wonderful university, one of Britain's great institutions in higher education. But more than all of that, it has been an institution which has, in my lifetime, grown from being a sleepy backwater to a star amongst universities, not just nationally but internationally. You saw that with the degrees that were awarded today, the hugely diverse group of students that came forward. And the university itself has in its growth acquired an enormous reputation for innovation and entrepreneurship. And they're both key factors that's going to help Britain out of its economic problems today.
As I mentioned, you are currently a member of the House of Lords. Do you enjoy the work that entails?
Yes, I do. I'm involved in areas in the House. I'm a backbencher. I'm not on any of the select committees. The reason I chair the House of Lords Defence Group is not just because I'm interested in defence. My key interest is the personnel. We have over 200,000 of our citizens who are in the armed forces, and substantial number of those on operations in Afghanistan, Iraq and other places. And it's their welfare and how they're treated, I guess, goes back to my trade union days. Within a defence policy, it's important that they're looked after. So that's why I'm interested in that. I'm also very interested in issues of housing and pensions and, of course, long life. Interest of women, the rights of women, the position of women in society, and going forward, how we can improve their lot.
As you mentioned, we're facing an economic crisis at the moment, which undermines some of the arguments behind securing pensions and social housing and indeed rights for women. How do you kind of fight back against the arguments to let those pay?
Well, I think there has to be change. We have a civil service who traditionally have not been well paid, but have had a decent pension. And actually, the average pension they get is not substantial. But today, it's impossible to carry on funding the pensions at the level they are because we're living longer, we're going to have to work longer. There will need to be changes, but actually, people are still entitled to have a pension. And I think what we've got to try and do is bring about the change without seriously damaging the low income that people do have amongst the mass of people. I mean, you know, you hear of employers who have £1 million a year paid into their pension fund. It's obscene in many respects. And you have someone else who works for years and years, a whole lifetime, and ends up with £3,000 pension. So it's not fair, it's not equal. But because of the economic climate that we've got, and you've seen in the private sector final salary schemes diminishing and money purchase, in other words, that all the risk is transferred from the employer to the employee, then I think across the board that there does have to be changes. How that's brought about has to be in a fair and equitable way. Big challenge for the trade unions.
Are you quite pragmatic in your outlook, would you say?
Yes, I've always been known as a pragmatist. Some people regard it as an insult. My view is it's much better to take one step forward and keep it than one step forward and two steps back. And also, I think it is important that you've got a very strongly held point of view. You need to listen to the other person's point of view, because otherwise you're just going to be an advocate. You're not going to be someone that negotiates and achieves something. So, yes, I am a pragmatist.
You had the opportunity to be elected into a safe seat and become a member of the House of Commons. Why did you decline this offer?
Because I love my trade union work. I'd not long been elected a trade union official, and I felt just to accept the MP's job, it would have been a great thing to achieve, and something I probably would have enjoyed doing because it's still with people. But I'd just been elected by the trade union members in my area as their official, and to walk out on that would have been an abuse of asking them to put their confidence in me. But also, as a trade unionist, you're not in London 4 days a week in the House of Commons, detached from your members. You're actually in there, in factories every day, going into offices, on new sites, meeting the people who have elected you. And I guess that's really the core of everything I really enjoy. I enjoy being with people, working with people. You have lots of fun. It's marvellous to be able to achieve something with them, for them. And it's great then to know that when you go to bed at night, well, yeah, I enjoyed doing that. You know, if you don't enjoy what you're doing in life, it's a pretty miserable lot.
So you were quite aware of what you liked to do.
Oh, yes.
And stuck to your guns, really.
I wasn't when I was a young woman. When I was a young woman in the trade union movement, I was working as a secretary. And then people used to come in the office and the officers would be out, so I'd take down what their problems were. Didn't have mobile phones in those days. And so people had to come to the office to explain things. And so I gradually got sucked in that I was listening to the members and then following up, and realised very soon on that there's no way I could actually work by myself and do something that didn't involve people.
I understand that you were recruited at a very young age to the... Did someone notice your talent and kind of encourage you?
I don't think anyone noticed, including myself, whether I had any ability to be a trade union representative. I was very shy. But I worked in a printing factory, and the union representative saw me, and he realised, I didn't, that I was in a dead-end job. And they needed someone at the union, because the lady was leaving. I think she was getting married. And I was approached to go and apply for the job. I didn't know what I was going for. I didn't really know what the union did. And this chap was the union rep, took me for my interview. He took me to the union office. I met the two assistant secretaries who, to me as a young woman, seemed as old as Methuselah. The lady looked almost like an Agatha Christie type, flat hat and brogues, literally skirts down to her ankles. And I thought, gosh, if they're the assistants, how old is this guy I'm going to be working for? Well, he was younger than they were. And so I was recruited to that job. Didn't really know what it entailed, but gosh, did I soon love it. I absolutely...
Would you say you thrived?
I used to sing when I was going to work. It was marvellous, yes, yes.
At what stage did you set your sights on getting elected as General Secretary, do you think?
You've got to remember, you're talking to someone who was a typical young woman in those days, shy, no confidence in herself. Her biggest aspiration was to be the secretary to the male boss. Women just didn't get those positions, you know, being elected General Secretary of the Union. A woman? Come on, wake up. So I never thought about being General Secretary until I was at a function, a union dance, and the area president said to me, he was dancing with me, he said, "You're going to be the next General Secretary of this union." I said, "Get away with you. No way they'd have let me, a woman." "Oh, yes, they're all talking about it. If that Brenda Dean stands, she's got a good chance. So the men are going to get organised to make sure you don't." And that was a challenge. And so I didn't plan it. But when I thought it through, I thought, wonder, then I really went for it, yes.
Your negotiation skills are really well recognised at the time. You mentioned that you really like working with people. Did you enjoy that close contact with people when you were having to negotiate?
Yes, I mean, we all have to do the job in our own way. And I'd observed union negotiations and I thought, I can't do it like that. One, I'm not a man. And two, because I'm the first woman, if I do anything stupid, they'll either put it down to me being a woman or they might let me get away with it. And so what I did, I made sure that in the negotiations, I was really briefed. I made sure I read everything. I worked it out in my own mind. I even did kind of role-playing with myself. Well, if I ask for this, that's ridiculous. They're not going to go for that. So I need to have a backstop of what we will accept. But I also need to have something that the members will feel is acceptable to them. And the members should have a vote on it, a private, secret ballot, which we didn't do in those days. It was meeting, hands up. No, it wasn't in secret. So I said, well, we'll have secret ballots. And I also knew that although I had my members to account to and persuade them, because of the way industry was then, I was not negotiating with businesses that were owned by the people that run them. They were professional managers. So therefore, he had to go back and persuade the board that the deal he'd done with the union was good, was a good one for the company. So you always had to have a deal whereby they got something out of it. But I also knew that I had to go back there next year as well. So I couldn't really take them to the cleaners because they wouldn't want to negotiate with me the next year. So it was about what a lot of life's about. It was about building relationships, but built on respect. And I can remember on one negotiation, I actually told the employer in front of my members he'd offered too much and I wouldn't take it. It was in newspapers in Manchester. And this employer, very decent guy, had had a couple of industrial strikes. We weren't involved. So he was exhausted. And there we were, lined up for our negotiation to go in next. And we made a claim. We'd worked out the claim. We made a claim. And he said, well, I can't do that, but I'll offer you this on, it was on roster night, some night someone should be off working, and it was extra payment. And I, in my head, sat opposite him, and I'm working this out thinking, my goodness, that's a load more than we've asked for. So I said to him, I think, Mr. Dunn, we should have a short adjournment because I can't take that offer. I don't think you really are aware of what you're offering. So we had this adjournment. Can you imagine what my union lads, as I call them, sat and, what in hell are you doing, Brenda? And I said, he's been misled by his management, or he's not grasped it.
You have to think long term.
And you had to think long. I said, we want to come in next year, don't we? We want another good pay deal next year. And they accepted, give them their due. I thought they'd give me my packing orders, but they didn't. They said, OK, we trust you. Let's see how it goes. We got a very good agreement, and we got a better one the next year.
In one interview, you say that unless you accept change, your position can be significantly weakened. The media industry is having to face up to lots of changes today as online technologies advance. Do you have any advice for organisations looking for the best ways to introduce change to their employees and enabling their employees to accept that change?
Yes, I think you don't necessarily have to allow yourself to be in a position to react. I think if you can be proactive and suggest things that will make the job go more easily, possibly bring more productivity and more money into the company, an employer will listen. But your members want to have a fair share of that. That's the first thing. The second thing is that whatever work people do in life, I think should equip them better to do the next job. So the training element is important. So if a company's making changes, what you really need to go for is the best of the new technology. the best of the new developments and get your people trained on that. And then they've got a skill that is available and they can use to barter for good conditions if they're going to another company. You don't want your members in dead-end jobs. That would be awful. So it's a case of not just being reactive, but being proactive as well.
It's important for job satisfaction as well, training.
You're absolutely right, because some of the really labour-intensive jobs are the boring jobs, really boring, whereas the jobs that sometimes take less people but are the new technology, they not only up skills, but you're right, they increase the interest. And then they will often also increase the marketability of those individuals as employees.
Well, thanks ever so much for talking to me today. One final question. What life advice would you give your fellow graduates today?
I suggest don't get too rigid in your thinking. See what life opportunities are there. And don't take the cautious way. If a chance comes, and this is particularly for women who are very cautious, if an opportunity comes, you go for it. Remember, you're young. You've got time to make some mistakes. You've got plenty of time ahead of you. And you go for it, and go for it with confidence.
Thank you ever so much.